You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 106.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back to my podcast. You may recognize that as a short clip from Bach's Air on a G-String, nicely done by the Brunswick Duo from the UK. So stay tuned for the full piece at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I post the links to all of the sites we mention on my show notes at rodspulsepodcast.com. Today, the topic is MOOCs, in particular, Law Meet. I interviewed Carl Okamoto and Emily Foote, co-founders of ApprendNet LLC. Their legal apprenticeship education platform is called Law Meets, and they developed ApprendNet to host the meets online. By the way, they tell me a meet is a play on the word moot, as in a moot court or a mock trial. So they helped answer the questions, what's a traditional meet, what is a MOOC, how to use a MOOC to simulate an apprenticeship, how does Law Meets actually work, how did you build ApprendNet, is it scalable, and can anyone use ApprendNet, and what are the benefits of their platform? As they state on their website, online Law Meets leverage the ApprendNet platform to bring together a community of new and veteran lawyers in order to foster more frequent knowledge sharing without the high costs that traditional apprenticeships entail. Online Law Meets offer the ability to scale significant predictors of skills acquisition, including observation, social capital, and mentorship, end quote. So without further ado, here's my interview with Carl and Emily. Well, thank you so much for joining my podcast today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
I know a little bit about your product, having heard Emily at a recent PADLA meeting, our quarterly meeting. And I wonder, before we dig into your particular application of a MOOC, could you tell my audience what a MOOC is?
Well, it's an acronym that stands for Massive Open Online Course.
Emily referred to meets. What is a traditional meet before you decided to computerize this? What does that consist of?
Well, actually, the word meet was our play on the word moot. In legal education and in law schools, there's this interscholastic competition that is called moot court, or moot, some people call it mock trial, but moot court, where students role play the role of litigators and act out in a simulated environment what it's like to conduct litigation. And we had thought that was a thing that should also be available to those law students who aspire to be transactional lawyers rather than litigators, so who aspire to do deals and, in my view, be more productive contributors to society than perhaps people who sue each other. But we were amazed to find out that there was no such comparable experience available to law students. And so we created a thing called the Law Meet, which is an interscholastic competition for law students focused on teaching them transactional lawyering skills.
And this is a live competition that we started in 2010.
I see. So out of this live competition, you lightning struck and you decide, well, maybe there's a way you can scale this up and make it available online for people outside of your local institution.
Yeah, in a sense, what we started with was actually a class that I teach. It's a simulation class. And some of the students in that class came to me and said, well, why can't we take our skills on the road like our litigation-oriented peers do? And that's what led us to go look for this comparable experience and then to create the meet. But both of those things, both the class and the meet, share a common pedagogical structure where what we do is we ask students to sort of put themselves in role and actually get their hands dirty trying to apply what they learn in class to an actual problem-solving experience. And the challenge with that, in both the class setting and in the live competition, is that we can offer only very few students at a time that experience. So even though our MEET has grown to include 72 schools, for example, this year in six different cities and all that, it's still only a couple hundred students who will get the experience. And it's at great cost because we involve an enormous number of practitioners and coaches and all that. And even with all that effort, there's only 200 students or so who are going to have this taste of real life. And there are 150,000 students who ought to. And so to fix that, we created the online version.
Are the live meets, or were they under the auspices, if I recall, Drexel Law? Is that, I want to give a little plug for you, if that's appropriate.
Yeah, no. Drexel has been the host of both the regional round of the transactional one. We have two of these now. And the host for the final rounds of the transactional, and has also been the host for the new one we've launched on intellectual property law. So they, yes, have been a significant sponsor of the event since the beginning.
So now you've decided to move it to an online program, a MOOC. How did you go about finding or building a platform to do that? I know that's not trivial.
This effort we made to try to scale up the Law Meet experience led us to apply to the National Science Foundation for some funding to see if we could hire Emily and hire a programmer who might help us build a online teaching tool. And we were lucky enough to get that funding from the NSF, and that let us spend basically the last year putting together the platform that uses video as a way of replicating, not perfectly, but I think as close as you can get, and not have to go through the cost and expense of all getting together the experience of a meet. And so that's what we did. And once we had that platform, we were like, okay, let's see what we can do with it. And one of the things we focused on was that there seems to be a great deal of enthusiasm around online education, and in particular, the MOOC form of online education, the massive open online education. And my complaint with that form of learning has always been that it's relatively passive. It consists to a large degree of just watching someone who's been recorded in teaching their class, right? And while I admit that lots of them are just excellent, right? Those Feynman lectures are classics of educational history, that physics lectures, and they're worth watching no matter what. I think that as the phenomena grows, relying on the sort of charismatic nature of the teacher is going to be a little bit of a stretch. And so we thought, what is so neat about our meets is that they are a way of reinserting interactivity and student engagement into what is basically a flat talking head structure.
Mm-hmm. Are the law meets run asynchronously? Can students do this on their own time and schedule? Does it follow a schedule like a semester, or what's the structure, overall structure?
It's sort of a mix in that it's asynchronous from a day-to-day perspective, but it's it does have to fit within a schedule. Because for a law meet to work, you have to have a given peer group who are all participating at relatively the same period of time. Because one of the dynamics in a meet is that you have a peer review process and a peer engagement process. And unless you start people and stop them at some designated point of time, you're not going to have that group form. It'll just be this ongoing in and out thing. So a meet always has to have a beginning and an end. And we've been using a week or 2 weeks as the usual. But within that week or 2 weeks, people can come and go whenever they want.
How big are you? Have your cohorts been? I know you've, when did you first start? And how many students have you had through the system by now?
Well, I think that we've used Law Meets as classroom tools first, right? And so our first use of a meet was to build exercises within a particular classroom setting. We had a open national version of a law meet, but it wasn't really a MOOC. It was just sort of we let multiple classes participate at the same time. And that was 115 students was the participant count. I think we're up to, I don't know, more 1,500. I've forgotten what the ultimate number is. How many people have done a meet?
over 1,500 have done a meet as a classroom assignment.
Right.
In terms of a MOOC that includes meets, we haven't yet run a true MOOC.
Yeah, this one that we're doing now in October is going to be the first one. Mm-hmm. And so far we have about 300 students signed up.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the, I don't know how much you know about the technical infrastructure there. Is this something that's hosted in the cloud? Is hosted at Drexel?
No, our system is all on Amazon, and so it's cloud-based.
That's the way to do it these days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't need to have your own data center. You just you rent a virtual service from Amazon.
Yeah, no, that's great.
It took me a while to sort of get my head around how this all worked. Can you give us just sort of a run through of how your online law meets work? What do the students do? What's the sequence of events?
Well, maybe Emily's the pro at explaining this.
Sure.
We'll let her go for it.
Okay. So a meet has three steps. And the first step involves the students learning by doing. The second involves them learning from their peers. And the third, learning from experts. So the first step, learning by doing, the students will come on to the site and they'll watch a video that presents a skills challenge. And in the law context, it's a client posing their problem. After watching the video, the students then research a response. We have links underneath the video. And then they upload a video response acting as the lawyer to the client. And that's all through our system. So they can upload a video file or they can record it through our platform. So that ends the first stage.
And then your experts review them, or what's the next part then?
Sure. So the next step is a peer review process. And what happens is the students will come back to our site and they will see a couple questions that are points that are our form of a rubric. After looking at those points, they'll review their peers. So they'll see a pair of two video submissions. They'll watch the first. They can leave written feedback under in a comment box. They'll watch the second, which they can also leave written feedback. And then they choose a preference, or they vote for which of the two they preferred based off the rubric. Our system then takes all of those votes or preferences and determines a ranking. So that ends the second stage, the peer review. And then we get to the expert review. And the experts, who are senior practitioners, attorneys, they see those top 10 or 5, whatever is the top number. They give them direct feedback. And then the final part is one or two of the senior attorneys will leave a video demonstration of themselves responding to the client. And all of the students, whether or not they were in that top 10, can read the written feedback and all can view the video expert demonstration.
You know, it's similar to a discussion board, but text discussion boards are so sort of dry, and you're, in a way, you're flipping the classroom as people are talking about. So I can imagine, my guess is that students are obviously much more engaged when they sort of have to figure it out for themselves, and then they're interested in what the answers are, and then they follow up and they finally see the expert. So it's really sort of flipping things around. How else do you think this will be used, or what do you think its potential is and being used in other areas in addition to law?
Well, I have to tell you, my favorite idea is to teach the violin with it. If you think about what it is you're presenting a piece of music, you record your endeavor, your performance, you watch your classmates perform their performance and give feedback to that, and learn from what you see on how they do it. And then when it's all over, you get to watch, Itzhak Perlman do it. And I think that would be a neat way to learn the violin. It'd be a way, perhaps not as good as the one-on-one, but if you're in the middle of, you're far away from Juilliard, you could still have a Juilliard lesson if you did it on the system, right? So that's the idea.
That's funny because my daughter is taking an elective in guitar. And the way to learn it best is one-on-one, but she's in this large class, about 25 people, and it just doesn't work very well.
Right.
And this, I can see how that would really be a great way to learn.
We've even been using it to help people train waitresses and hostesses and people who are working in the front of the house of a restaurant.
Do you have any other observations you'd like to make about the benefits of this and perhaps I know you're just getting started, but do you want to give us a hint at what's down the line?
Well, I think the greatest benefit that we've seen is how it motivates students to put in the effort. And I personally believe that the most impactful thing from a point of view of the learning outcome is how much work the student, him or herself, puts into the material, right? That no matter how powerful your lecture is, no matter how wonderful your slides are, blah, 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 what you really need are students who dig in, right, and put in that elbow grease, for lack of a better word, in attacking the material. Right? And what we have found, and this is the most, I think, remarkable part of it, is that by virtue of the performance anxiety, by virtue of the fact that it's a little bit gamified because you are voting on each other and we don't give you access to the expert video or the leaderboard until you've done your work, we see an extraordinary amount of effort on the part of the students where historically they were much more passive. And I think that's something that won't happen if all you're doing is watching some video. So a MOOC doesn't solve that problem. What you need is a reason for people to work hard. And people work hard when the problem is interesting and there's a little bit of competition. And lo and behold, it works.
And the engagement levels for the expert video are that much higher.
Right.
Like you said, the flipped classroom, they're very much ready to see that expert video once they've grappled it with themselves and watched their peers.
Yeah.
That really makes a lot of sense. Speaking of effort, I guess I would be a little concerned about how scalable this would be. If you become a victim of your success and get thousands of students applying, are you going to burn out your experts? Will you be able to repurpose and reuse videos and so on?
Well, I think there are a lot of strategies around that. I mean, one is that we could, in theory, have 100,000 participants in a particular MOOC, but skinny it down to only 5 who get expert feedback because of the peer voting process. And so the amount of actual direct feedback we have to produce is actually quite controllable just by the way we set the peer review leaderboard numbers. Now, whether 100,000 students would feel like it was worth their time when they know that only 5 might get feedback, that's something we'll have to find out. But when we did it for 115 and when we're doing it for 300, which is the rule, so far people find that still motivating enough. And so how big we can get, that's a good question. I think the real challenge is making obvious to more people how the platform could be used and then giving them the chance to build these courses or these exercises on their own. And we've always hoped that I can do these on law and Emily can do this on teacher training. And, maybe I could conceive how you do it for the violin, but I'm done, right? That's my main expertise. And so I'm hoping the nursing people and the customer service people and whoever figure out that this would be a cool platform and then just take it and use it as a tool to adapt to their own domain. And then that's the way it really propagates.
So this is a platform that you're making available to others. Now, is there a cost involved for other groups that want to start using this as a platform?
Well, at the moment, no. you can go in and just not have as much fun as you want. But I think obviously at some point we have to figure out a way to pay for the work. And have we figured out how to do that? No. We're like lots of MOOCs. At the moment, we're just excited that people want to do it. And we'll worry later about how to actually make it a sustainable product.
And it will be low cost.
Right. But I think that there's plenty of opportunity to do it that and without really changing the way the world works. I mean, just delivering textbooks in a more efficient way, because we talked about the links at the bottom of our exercises. well, that link should be to, you know, the textbook, for example. And if you're a publisher, you ought to bear the cost of that delivery and therefore sustain this model for students as a way for them to access your stuff. So I think there will be ways in which to make this pay for itself.
Great. Well, listen, this was very interesting. I think this will have a great response. And I know I'm going to be checking out your platform. I can think already of some ways we could use it here. So again, Emily and Carl, thank you so much for spending time with me today, and best of luck.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rodney.
That's it for today's episode. If you're like me, I'm sure you're wondering now how you could build an ApprendNet system to build a MOOC or just to supplement learning opportunities for your students. Certainly an interesting concept and capability. Don't forget to check the links on my show notes at rodspulsepodcast.com. Now stay tuned for Air on a G-String. Until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.